Coming up on this week's show, we tell you everything you need to know about Peacock TV. We reveal a massive announcement from World Soccer Talk. Our thoughts on ABC's coverage of the UEFA Nations League. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, international break. It's something we're not used to. We're used to it at this time of the year. What we're not used to is that there's, for most leagues in Europe, usually we get a few weeks of the season ramping up, starting off, excitement levels going high, and then we get the thud of the international break. We didn't get that this time. And from my point of view, you may think differently, but from my point of view, the expectations were pretty high going into this international break as far as seeing some better than average games. And I guess from what I saw, Kartik, it was some of the games were good, some of the games were dull, but it didn't live up to its expectations. What about you?
I stopped watching after Saturday. I haven't watched a game. I mean, I watched the WSL game on NBC on Sunday, but I have not watched international football since Portugal-Croatia. So, no, I was terribly bored by that point. And I understand the Spain-Germany game wasn't a full German squad. There were a lot of guys missing, Bayern players in particular, but it was, given those two nations' pedigree, it was very difficult to watch. I felt Norway-Austria was a little better. I watched that on Friday, but then the England-Iceland match was that's one of the worst matches of football I've probably watched in the last decade, honestly, at any level, including semi-pro games in the United States. It was awful. And then Portugal-Croatia was another case of Croatia, just like they came out in Nations League in 2018, a summer hangover. They were missing Brozovic and Rakitic, among others. So maybe, and Perisic, right, because he plays for Bayern. So maybe there was an explanation, but that was just really bad also. And in fact, Portugal disappointed me, even though they scored four goals. So because they just didn't have the cutting edge in front of goal without Cristiano that they would have otherwise. But they were very good. Obviously, they had they have a stacked squad. So I didn't like it. I mean, I thought that the thing that was good was ABC's coverage, which we can get into.
Yeah, the Iceland-England game was dull. So dull, as a matter of fact, that John Champion just was telling stories about different things, that his experiences in hotels in Eastern European countries. And it was a very different John Champion in this one, in terms of not... I mean, usually he's very quiet and very focused on the game. This was a very talkative John Champion. There really wasn't much to talk about in the game itself, so he went on and Taylor and him kind of interacted back and forth. But yeah, the first half was really dull. I think part of it too is that the speed of the game that England is playing, also against a team like Iceland, and also against Denmark, was the same thing too, where it's they're bunkering in, it's very defensive. England has a tough time trying to compete against that. But even the other games, I think I saw more international games than you, Kartik, but you didn't miss much. I mean, I saw Wales against Bulgaria, Netherlands against Italy, like Denmark against England, I mentioned. I think Portugal, Croatia, you saw that one too. But for the most part, the games were pretty uneventful and rather boring, which is a shame, though, too, because the ABC's coverage was good. It was great to see Kay Murray and Craig Burley doing the half times and pre-match and post-match. That was good. I expected something a little bit bigger from ABC, with it being on ABC. I was expecting some surprise or some bells and whistles. We didn't really get that. It just seemed to be a very cost-effective, very kind of without being splashy or flashy broadcast. Nothing incredibly great. I mean, that Iceland-England game, I tuned in at, I think, noon, expecting it to have a couple of minutes of pre-game coverage, but it went right into the game. It was kind of John Champion starting off with the commentary, and off you go. What about you? What are your thoughts about the coverage on ABC?
I thought it was quite good in terms of the between matches with Craig Burley and Kay Murray, and they brought Alejandro Moreno, Adrian Healy, and Taylor Twellman on for some commentary. There was a real kind of emphasis on what was happening in Europe in club football. And Burley was able to direct the conversation that way. Kay Murray did a fantastic job of hosting. This gives ESPN a lot of flexibility and potential with her being there, and the ability, her knowledge level of just about every league in Europe is so high that you can throw her in to any of these circumstances, and she's very, very natural. And this gives her greater opportunities than she had at BN, where their portfolio of matches was limited, as we know, particularly toward the end, right? So I thought they were very good. I thought that the studio was very informative. I enjoyed it. I picked up a lot from it. They also were promoting, obviously, the Bundesliga starting on ESPN. So that was good. I mean, you know, they couldn't control the quality of match, and they couldn't. And I think there is a general disdain among commentators for this specific international break, the September break, because it comes so early in the European club seasons normally. And as you said at the outset, there was an expectation this time that maybe it would be better. And as it turned out, I think what we saw was it was a lot of players who had just finished their club season, and with the exception of players playing in Liga, right, or Scotland, although Scotland restarted, right? So, yep. And Liga restarted. So you had the normal September problem there, and then you had a bunch of players who were still kind of mentally on holiday, honestly. I don't think there was a whole lot of intensity or cutting edge in these matches, and that's a byproduct of the timing. That's a byproduct of FIFA and UEFA trying to force international dates into the calendar, and it's something that we have gotten accustomed to as people who watch football and cover football. I don't know. I mean, at some point there has to be a honest conversation about the September international date. They got rid of the August date. Remember, we used to have an August date, which would sometimes happen within the first week of club seasons or right before club seasons kicked off. That was something FIFA did after, I think, the 2012 Euros. They finally got rid of those. I'd like to see the September date maybe eliminated, and if that means you add an additional match in October or November, you put another international date somewhere else on the calendar, I guess I would be in favor of it. But this particular international break is typically unbearable, and it turned out to be again. I mean, I gave it a chance. The fact that I watched a few games at the beginning of the week is more than I would normally do, honestly, in this September break. So
now the challenge is going to be, Kartik, is that it's congested. I mean, from now till 2022, to the World Cup, everything on the international stage is going to be in overdrive, is going to be games one after another, just trying to squeeze in as many games in as possible to make up for the lost time. And you look at the U.S. men's national team. CONCACAF this week announced that the qualifiers, which would have been playing now in September, also in games in October and November, they've been pushed, the first qualifiers until March of 2021. And by the time that the US kicks off, I think their first game is going to be probably about June, right before the Gold Cup. And then right after that, they go some big matches against Mexico, etc. So you've got some countries and some regions that haven't played games and won't be playing until next year. And then they're in overdrive where it's one game after another, squeezing them in to try to get these games out of the way. Some of them are CONCACAF Nations League games, I think, but many of them are the World Cup qualifiers. So I mean, for 2022, which is a big deal, especially for this region, especially for the U.S. men's national team. And from what I understand, it looks like the U.S. is going to play a friendly in October against one of the teams in this region, probably Panama, but it hasn't been decided yet. And that game's going to be on ESPN2, I think October 8th, I think it is. They haven't announced anything yet, but that's what we're looking at. So you've got two sides of this. You've got the UEFA countries that haven't had much of a break. You mean they've been playing, I mean, the German Bundesliga is one example. And you saw Germany go through some really poor results this past week. But you've got those which are very tired. And on the other hand, you've got the CONCACAF region that probably, I mean, haven't played that much. They're going to be very rusty next year, like March through June. So it's a strange world we're living in. But yeah, the sooner the international break is over, which it's over, thank God, we now move on to European soccer and back into all these big seasons that start up this weekend. And actually the weekend after that with the German League and then the Italian League and so on and so forth. All right, Kartik, anything else that you saw from this past week? Anything else worth mentioning?
Yeah, so watch the Manchester United-Chelsea match, women's match on NBCSN, the WSL coverage. And the one thing I noticed is the camera seemed to be, and again, it's a byproduct of maybe the facility and not having any fans, it being closed fans, the camera cameras were so close to the pitch, and I don't remember seeing a match from England, even at the League One or League Two levels, where the camera work, it wasn't a byproduct of the camera work; it was the camera placement. I really enjoyed watching this because it was almost like being there. It was like being pitch side, which I don't know what the specifics were as to why the cameras were placed where they were, but it was really enjoyable. So I picked up on that from the broadcast. The match itself was pretty good. It was better than the Community Shield had been a week earlier, and then also watched Aston Villa and Manchester City on the FA Player, which is an app, obviously, where you can get the WSL matches, and that match was quite good. Georgia Stanaway, who had a poor match in the Community Shield, came back and she scored twice for Man City. So that was the extent of it. I mean, now I'm geared up and ready for the start of La Liga and the Premier League, and so I anticipate I'll probably watch more football in one day on Saturday than I did in the last 2 weeks combined.
Yeah, and before we move on to the news section, it's interesting this season so far, Kartik, a lot of last-minute changes. So, for example, La Liga was scheduled to have their opening game on Friday. It was Granada against Athletic Club, and you'd have games on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Well, the Spanish league has been pushing La Liga really, really hard, saying that we don't want any games on Fridays, we don't want any games on Mondays, we want to go back to the traditional Saturday and Sundays. And it's been a squabble for years now between La Liga and the Spanish Football Federation. So at the last minute, they decided to move the Friday game to Saturday, and they moved the Monday game to Sunday. So you've got games on Saturday and Sunday this weekend, and that's it. So last-minute change there. Also, a last-minute change in the Premier League. Premier League made a big announcement this week, probably on Tuesday, I think it was, where because the fans are not in the stadium, for the month of September, all of the games are going to be televised. Most of them are on Sky Sports. I believe some of them are on BT Sport. But that, in England, is a big deal because, I mean, in England, very few of the games are actually televised. So here you go, all the games on television. But in order to do that, what the Premier League did was they've staggered the kickoff time. So instead of having, say, three games on at 3 p.m. British time kickoff, which is 10 a.m. Eastern on a Saturday, they went ahead and staggered the kickoff. So they moved, for example, Newcastle against West Ham United, which was scheduled for this Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern on NBCSN, has now been pushed to 3 o'clock on Saturday, and now it's on Peacock. And then you've got Crystal Palace against Southampton, which was, it's staying at the same time. It was originally going to be on Peacock, but now that's been moved to NBCSN to replace the Newcastle game. So on and so forth. There was an Arsenal game, I think, in the second week of the season, that's been moved, the kickoff time on that. Monday's kickoff time for the, I think it was the Wolves against Sheffield United, is moved. So anyway, so in terms of the schedules, whether it's La Liga or the Premier League, definitely go to worldsoccertalk.com for the latest schedules, because there have been some big changes. And for those of us who have bookmarked or put on a calendar or written down what games are on and what times, some of those have changed. Actually, a lot of those have changed. Hi, Kartik. Moving on to the TV streaming news. And we've got a big announcement. That big announcement is that today, September 10th, Thursday, 2020, World Soccer Talk is launching. and releasing a brand new ebook. And the title of this ebook is The Ultimate Soccer TV and Streaming Guide. Now, this is something I've been working on for the past several months. It's putting together a ebook. It's about 22 pages, and it's packed full of all the leagues from around the world and which broadcasters have the rights to them and which games you can watch on television, which ones you can watch on streaming. And it's one of those things. It's taken an enormous amount of effort in terms of interviews, research, and updating, too, because there's so many last-minute changes. So this is going to be available for free to all our listeners beginning at noon Eastern time on Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Just go to worldsoccertalk.com to the homepage, and then you'll have a link there to go ahead and download the ebook. And then also with that, too, you get a free daily email newsletter with the latest soccer news and the latest schedules. And Kartik, too, it's actually designed, the ebook is designed by somebody that you know, Derek Rees.
Yeah, and he does most of my design work that I do for various subjects, whether it's a history podcast or political ebook, etc. As well as having worked with him at the NASL and Fort Lauderdale Strikers, so I have he's actually the president of a local supporters owned club, and I'm the vice president. So I speak very highly of his work, and it's going to be an outstanding thing to download and read as we start a new season. We start a new era in so many ways in terms of broadcast this year.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, Kartik, to talk about Peacock TV. That for fans of the Premier League, this is going to be a massive weekend with Peacock TV. And there's so many different ways we can look at this as far as Peacock, but I want to try to answer many questions that listeners will have. And that is, I mean, again, Kartik, if you have any questions along the way here too, feel free to jump in. But for those listeners who haven't caught up on Peacock, Peacock is going to be the replacement for NBC Sports Gold's Premier League Pass. But Peacock isn't just the shoulder programming and the streaming of select games. It has thousands of TV shows and programs and movies. Some of them are actually original programming. Some of them are original shows and movies that are on there. In addition to that, you've got live access to a lot of the NBC channels, you know, NBC News, etc., Sky News. And then you've got coming this weekend, then, of course, the Premier League matches. And for this season, 175 games are going to be exclusive to Peacock. The big change with this one, that in the past, NBC Sports Gold kind of focused more on your smaller teams. And it was more games, you know, your Brightons, Crystal Palaces, Burnleys, Sheffield United's, those Norwich City, those clubs. This season, more of the big games are going to be on exclusive to streaming. So, for example, Chelsea, the first two matches of the season, of the 2020 season, are going to be exclusive to Peacock. And I should add too, Kartik, I know you mentioned this last week, it's Peacock Premium. So there's three different levels of Peacock. There's Peacock Free, which you can watch your TV shows and things like that. There's Peacock Premium, which has all of the exclusive Premier League matches as well as the Premier League programming. And then there's Peacock Premium Plus, which is the same as Peacock Premium, except it has no advertising. Now, the big news this week, too, was that NBC Sports announced that Peacock is going to have Premier League TV. So Premier League TV is what they're calling it. They're going to have its own channel, which will have all of the programming that we've been accustomed to watching from Premier League productions. And this is the stuff that we used to get, the shoulder programming on NBC Sports Gold. So Premier League news, the fantasy football show, a lot of interviews, documentaries, classic matches, review shows, preview shows, etc. And I believe some of it might be Sky Sports News. We'll have to wait and see. But that is also going to be on Peacock. Now, the big question is how do you get Peacock? Okay, well, so if you are a Comcast subscriber, so you subscribe to television, it's free. Peacock Premium is free for Comcast customers. If you're a Comcast internet customer, like I am, but I don't subscribe to to Comcast Television, you can still watch it for free too. You just log in to the peacocktv.com website, and then it would know that you're a Comcast customer, and then you can watch it for free. Now, for everyone else, it's $5 a month. And for $5 a month, you get the Premier League, Peacock Premium, which has all of the games and has all of the programming. I'm trying to think of content. And actually, there's the Peacock Premium Plus, which is the one that's ad-free. That is $9.99 a month. Kartik, any questions so far on the Peacock Premium?
For me, no, but I'm sure the listeners are going to have a ton of questions.
Well, the big question is, and the big point of contention and the big point of frustration this week has been Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So both of those devices are delaying adding the Peacock app to its platform. And this reminds me, Kartik, of going back in the time machine now to 2013, to the beginning of the Premier League on NBC Sports. And at that time, there was something new called NBC Sports Live Extra. And there was so you had all the games available online, but then also you had many of these games available on television, but it'd be through your Comcast, or it'd be through Dish Network or DirecTV or Cox or whichever your cable or satellite TV company was. But most of them didn't have it on day one. Most of them had NBC Sports, yes, and the NBC Sports Network, but they did not have the NBC Sports Live Extra, the actual channels. And it took a whole campaign, I think like thousands, or probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of soccer fans in the United States writing and protesting and sending emails to the different cable companies and different satellite companies saying, I want my NBC Sports Live Extra, so I have all those channels. We're in a similar boat right now, because with Roku and Amazon Fire, NBC Sports is providing Peacock for free to those companies. So all they have to do is put the app on the Roku, put the app on Amazon Fire, and away we go. But both Amazon and Roku are delaying it, and they're squabbling, trying to get more money out of NBC Sports and being difficult to work with. So that's the delay we've gotten, is that the kind of the frustration, the delay point is with Roku and Amazon. So if you do have a Roku, or you do have an Amazon Fire TV stick or a TV device, I would suggest contact Roku, contact Amazon, and say to them, hey, I want my Peacock. I want to be able to watch my Premier League matches. Now, in the short term, even if you do have a Roku or you have a Amazon Fire TV stick, you can still watch the Premier League matches. You can watch it on your tablet. You can watch it on your iPhone or Android phone. You can watch it on your computer. All you have to do is go to peacocktv.com and then sign up through there. It's free for 7 days. And after that, again, it's $5 a month if you're not a Comcast customer, or if you are a Comcast customer, it's free. So I think I've covered everything, Kartik. Anything else you can think of as far as any questions that might come up?
No, other than the fact that I think there is an issue in terms of if a match is on NBCSN, it is not on Peacock Premium at the same time. So the simplicity that which NBC had implemented, where you kind of knew when the games were and where they were, is gone with this, because there are some people who've asked me, oh, well, maybe I can just cut the cord and get Peacock Premium and I'll have all the Premier League matches. And that's not the case.
Yeah, for me personally, that's the big bone of contention I have, is that I would love to have access to every single game through Peacock and be able to subscribe to Peacock Premium and probably pay more to have access to everything and then cut the cord. But yes, you do need NBCSN, and also you need NBC Over the Air, which you can get with Rabbit Ears. But that's the tricky part. And then so you still need either a cable subscription or a streaming subscription to, say, Fubo TV or YouTube TV or Sling Blue to get your NBCSN and to get kind of all of the coverage. So it is still in this, we're living in that kind of, but we're not quite cord cutters. We're still, I guess you could cut the cord from Comcast, but then subscribe to, say, Fubo or YouTube TV and then get NBCSN through there, but then Comcast is still getting money that way. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's my big thing, is that I think at some point in the future, we will get that. It may not be with NBC. It may be with the next rights holder to the Premier League, where they make every single game available through streaming, but then we would have to pay more money. So it is, but that's the world that we live in right now. It's a big change. So this weekend, there aren't a ton of games on Peacock. I mean, there's, I think, one on Saturday. I think Spurs against Everton on Sunday. And there might be another one on Sunday. And then on Monday, the big one is Brighton against Chelsea. And that is exclusive to Peacock Premium. So for this weekend, there's a few games, definitely 3 to 4 games. The following weekend, there's only one game on television, and that's the Man United game at 12:30 on NBCSN on Saturday Eastern Time. Every single other game on that weekend is on Peacock. So if you are considering Peacock, definitely check it out. The other thing, too, is that we have a Peacock FAQ on the website that goes into a lot of detail. We have an article that was written by Aram, who's one of our writers, and that focuses on why, getting more into the details of why basically Roku and Amazon are delaying this launch of Peacock on those devices. In addition to that, too, we'll have more articles in the next 24 hours that go deeper into Peacock and explaining it for everyone. So if you did miss anything on this podcast or you do want more information, definitely go to worldsoccertalk.com and then we'll hook you up. And if you can't find the answer you're looking for, post it in the comments and we'll get back to you ASAP. So big weekend for Peacock, big weekend for Premier League, and Championship starts on Friday. You've got the La Liga on Saturday. It's a big weekend for soccer fans. Now, speaking of big weekends for soccer fans, last weekend, Kartik, in the TV ratings, there were some big games. We mentioned the Iceland-England game and Portugal against Croatia, both of those games on ABC. What we didn't mention was, I don't think, Sky Blue against Washington on CBS, the NWSL. That game was on Saturday on big CBS, as well as Atlanta against Orlando, and that was on over-the-air Fox. So what you had was four major games on four over-the-air networks in the United States. And what about the TV ratings? Can you share some of those with the listeners?
Yeah, so the Sky Blue Washington match, which I did watch, and I forgot to mention that earlier, 381,000 viewers on CBS over the air. It was on alongside or competing with the Nations League matches on ABC, both the second half of Iceland, England, plus the link show in between and the kickoff of Portugal-Croatia. Portugal-Croatia had 445,000 viewers on ABC, 421,000 viewers for Atlanta-Orlando on Fox. And to be honest with you, Chris, maybe I'm just so out of the MLS scene. I had no idea this match was on. I had no idea it was taking place. But that number isn't as bad as some other numbers we've seen for MLS. 429,000 for Iceland-England. There's obviously more interest in England than the U.S. That's a decent number on ABC. That was from noon Eastern time to 2 yep. p.m. Eastern time.
729. Yep.
729.
Right.
Again, nothing cracking a million or getting close to a million.
Exactly. And then the lowest one was Miami against Nashville. This was on FS1 on Sunday night. It had a rain delay of an hour and a half, typical Florida summertime weather, Kartik. But only 78,000 people watched this game, which was another really, really boring, unfortunate, boring Miami game. Just really, really poor start to the season for this expansion club. Moving on to listener mailbag, and first up is Jason. Jason says, I am very complimentary to the current format of the podcast. It is unique and interesting. There are lots of Premier League podcasts out there. Great job keeping this entity relevant. Robert says, this MLS season has been uneven. There have been some very exciting and entertaining games and some truly terrible games. I watch a lot of Premier League games, and and the same is true. Some great games and some terrible ones. The difference is the team payrolls. Manchester United is tops at $154 million $1 million for the past year. In 2018, MLS's team in Toronto, their payroll was $26 million. Seattle's was $17 million. So we're getting into some Soconomics here, Kartik, as far as, I mean, Stefan Szymanski often saying that kind of the level of quality and how good a team can be and how much success they can achieve is directly relevant to the payroll. And you look at MLS and Seattle at $17 million. Man United, yes, they're, I mean, definitely not as good as they have been, but $154 million. There's no comparison.
But I still think it's significant that Toronto and Seattle are the top two spenders in MLS because they have met in three of the last four MLS Cups.
That's true.
Let's not forget that. So, yeah. So there are people who say, well, MLS is very, very competitive because of its structure. But when teams are able to use salary cap exemptions, and Toronto has been masterful at it. If you follow MLS, you realize how good they have been at kind of cap, gaming the cap. They have been able to reach three MLS Cup finals in the last 4 years. Same with Seattle, who are the second biggest spenders in the league. So there's still a correlation. Now, this season, because of all the disruption and uneven schedules, Columbus is the top team. They're not the top spenders. But I would expect once we get back to our normal structure in MLS next season that, again, Toronto and Seattle would be the top two teams, or it would be LAFC, Atlanta, whoever's spending more money, honestly. So even in MLS, that rule applies.
Yeah, the one thing about MLS I would love to have is if any listeners who are watching an MLS game and it's really exciting, it's an incredible game, it's just tweet us at World Soccer Talk and let us know, because oftentimes, like the last 3 weeks, I've been watching. So I watched the El Tráfico LAFC against LA Galaxy derby, and that was just what the LA Times said was unwatchable. It was just stop start. It was played in the heat of the afternoon and was not an attractive soccer game to watch. Then I think the week after that, I watched Atlanta against Miami, which was a 0-0 game in Atlanta, a really kind of woeful game. And then I think the week after that, I was watching Nashville against Miami, the one that was on FS1, rain delayed. That was pretty poor too. So it'd be great if somebody could say, hey, Chris, hey, here's a game that's actually on fire right now. Check it out. Because oftentimes the games I do watch, I mean, maybe it's just me picking wrong games, but oftentimes the quality level is it's laughable at times when you see how poor some of these players are. Moving on, El Jefe says, my interest in MLS has been waning over the last few years, but 2020 was the year that MLS completely jumped the shark for me, no question. I'm pretty much 100% European soccer at this point, especially with the addition of the Scottish League, the second league of the Bundesliga, and the ability to watch every single Serie A game on demand. Richie says, I have to disagree about some of the International Champions Cup points. The ICC, to hear Charlie Stilettano tells it, puts terms in the contracts that require the big names to play part of each game, at least. When Real Madrid came over a few times, Ronaldo played. When Barcelona came, Messi played. It could be getting stale in general, but it isn't because the squads are half-baked. Now, I mean, you and I, Kartik, were at the El Clasico in Miami a few years ago, and we saw, I mean, Messi played. It was a sensational game. I really enjoyed that one as far as the atmosphere of that one. But there are other games in ICC where it is...
Ronaldo did not play in that game, by the way, though.
Right, Ronaldo didn't. But I think it was other reasons, though. I don't know if he was injured or if it was... I think if he was available...
He had a court case in Spain about
tax evasion. Ah, yeah, that tax evasion. That's right. But there are other ICC games where it is almost youth squads being played. And again, too, I'll go back to my main point, which is if you're an Everton supporter and you're wearing, you know, in the blue of the Toffees and you're going to support Everton, and even if it's your youth players or kind of second string players, it's still the club. There is that appeal there too. So,
and quite frankly, American audiences got the first look at Kelechi Iheanacho 1 year when Manchester City came over. He's had a decent Premier League career. He's now at Leicester, and then he got the first look at Phil Foden. And in fact, Pep told the media after the match, "You guys are going to remember being here because you're the first ones who got to see him play live." And that was however many years ago. It was, I think, 2017. So sometimes there's something in seeing those youth players. Yeah. And in Man City's case, two of the times they've come over for the ICC, that's been the case. And Pep specifically said that to the media. "You're going to remember you were here because you saw Phil Foden play for the first time." And he's right.
Yeah, I remember too, going back, this is going back a long time ago now too, but Romelu Lukaku, watching him play for Chelsea in a ICC game in Miami, and I think it was in one of the training sessions. I had a chance to talk to him for a little bit, and at that point he was a young kid. He was, basically kind of starting his career, wasn't on the first team yet, but really likable guy, really great kind of personality, really a nice guy, and very, very humble. And that was the impression I got. But that was early in Lukaku's career, and being able to see him play in the ICC and see some of the skills he had and some of the potential he had, and he's lived up to that. So yeah, there's good things and bad things about ICC. Definitely, some people love it, some people hate it. It depends on each individual, and I think the people that do hate it hate on the people that go to the games, that buy the tickets, and there is a lot of hostility. And I think a lot of that hostility is because MLS fans position it as meaningless games, but then they see that the actual attendances, they see the record-breaking games that Man United against Real Madrid at the University of Michigan. Breaking, I think it was 108,000 people, breaking a U.S. record for club soccer. And I think there's a little bit of jealousy there too. But I mean, there's definitely good points in terms of the level not being at the highest. But I think a lot of people going into those games are not expecting the levels to be at the highest. They're preseason games. It's effectively preseason friendlies, but it's put into a tournament structure. Now, listeners, we want you to have your say. So if you have any questions for us about anything we've talked about on this podcast or anything related to TV and streaming, we often get a lot of questions from Facebook about transfers and other things unrelated to the world of TV and streaming. And oftentimes we kind of pass on those just because that's not this podcast. That's not what we're about. But if you do have a question or an opinion, anything we've said, let us know. We'd love to read those out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, this weekend, any games in particular that you're looking forward to watching that's a must-see on your part?
Yeah, Liverpool Leeds, and it's less because of Liverpool, more because of Leeds. A lot of excitement about Leeds being back in the Premier League. I think this is an element, the Premier League, and I apologize to newer fans, mostly in the United States, who don't remember Leeds in the top flight, but the Premier League has been missing an element for 15 years, and that element is back. And Leeds is one of the four largest cities in the country, by the way. It's a one-club town, and it's a club that has had so much success and so much near success, right? So much heartbreak in Europe and in the league through the years. It's going to be amazing to have them back, and they are going to play a kind of football based on what we saw in the championship the last two seasons, that is going to make your mouth water and blow you away. If you think that the teams in the Premier League are entertaining and you think it's the greatest show on earth, well, the greatest show on earth is about to get greater, because Leeds will probably play the best football in the Premier League this season. That will leave them open, and they will lose some games 4 or 5-0 because of that, right? But I can't wait. I'm just so excited about that specifically. Yeah. And about Bielsa and Leeds being up, and they've signed Rodrigo. They're going after Julian Draxler, and they've got a solid team coming up from the championship. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's interesting too, Kartik, because I'm on the same boat too. So Marcelo Bielsa, the way that he has Leeds United playing right now, the style of play is so different and so unique to anyone else that's out there. He has his own coaching style. He has his own playing style. And we haven't seen this before in the Premier League, as far as I know. So how that translates to the Premier League will be fascinating, especially against Liverpool, of all teams, to start off the season. I'm really, really interested in that. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that how hard these Leeds United players play, how hard they press, how they go basically 100% every single minute. It is going to be interesting. It could be, like you said, Liverpool could win this one 7-0, or it could be that Leeds would win 3-1, or you never know. But it's always an exciting team. Now, looking to the past, though, Kartik, I mean, for a lot of listeners, they may have never seen Leeds United play. I mean, the last time they were in the Premier League was 2004. It's been a long time. I mean, I'm sure you remember too, watching that final match against Bolton and seeing the Leeds United supporters crying. Alan Smith, inconsolable. Just a really sad end to that season. I mean, it was an awful season from Leeds United. But to see one of the major clubs in England get relegated, and they've never been back since then. Also, too, in between that, so in between 2004 and 2020, where we are today, The Damned United, one of the best movies ever about soccer, about Brian Clough's short stint as a manager at Leeds United. And that really captivated a lot of soccer fans. And to learn more about the folklore of Brian Clough, but also Leeds United, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's a must-see. But to me, I think a lot of us fell in love with that film. It's still one of the best in my mind. And now we get to see the real thing. We get to see the Leeds United, who has such a rich history, highs and lows. But this is going to be one of the teams, for me, that's going to be a must-watch every single week. And I don't support any team in the Premier League.
Yeah, and to put things in context, when Leeds went down, they had maybe the best young player in the Premier League, a young team player in the Premier League, in James Milner. Now they're back up 16 years later, and he's a star for the other team, and maybe he'll end his career at Leeds. But that's a testament to his work ethic. He's a teetotaler, by the way. The kind of career he's had, James Milner. He gets to play against Leeds potentially on Saturday. You mentioned those players, Alan Smith, Rio Ferdinand, others that ended up getting sold by them in their financial desperation. Viduka, Kuehl, Paul Robinson. You could go on and on. So many of those guys, Robbie Keane, they all went on to have great careers after they left Leeds, other than Alan Smith because of his injuries. And you just still think about what could have been if that team had been held together. I had actually been so in love with that particular set of Leeds players. I had picked them to win the Premier League in, I think, the 2000-2001 season. That year they got to the semifinals of the Champions League, but they had blown their cash, right, to try and win the Champions League. And they finished fifth in the league, and everything kind of collapsed from there. But incredible story, them being back up. Let's not forget Fulham, who have a lot of support in the U.S., are back up. West Brom, who are playing better football under Slaven Bilic in terms of style than they did under Tony Pulis when they bored us to death a few years ago, are going to be back up. So while I don't think they're going to stay up, they're going to be – don't judge West Brom by their previous stint in the Premier League. They're going to be more watchable this time under Bilic. He's had them play some very nice football in the Championship.
Yeah, and West Brom too. Keep an eye out for Perea, who's a number 10, really, really skillful young player. Who, if he hadn't been promoted with West Brom, surely would have been signed by one of the big clubs in the Premier League, but a fantastic player to watch. Going back to Leeds for a minute, Kartik, a couple of other players to mention that had really kind of their success early on at Leeds United. Two players, Robbie Fowler and Eric Cantona. And of course, Robbie Fowler went on to go to Liverpool, became a superstar. Eric Cantona, of course, went on to Man United, became a superstar. The one other thing I want to mention too about Leeds United, and this is going to be something, well, That's the shame of it, though. Hopefully the fans will be back in the stadium in October. So the Premier League is pushing, has submitted proposals to go ahead and bring fans back a certain percentage in October. And that is awaiting government approval. They have to go through and review all of the procedures and make sure it's safe and kosher. But the one thing that is out of this world are the Leeds United supporters. And if you have a home game at Elland Road, ideally it's a you mean it's before coronavirus or after coronavirus when you have a packed out crowd. But once that happens, Kartik, those fans are fever pitch. They are old school. They are loud as hell. And it's something that the Premier League hasn't seen in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I agree. And Leeds supporters traveling once the ban on fans is lifted is going to be amazing. One last shout for the new season of a player to watch from a newly promoted team, Grady Diangana, who was a West Ham player on loan last season to West Brom, had a phenomenal season in the Championship, just was signed permanently by West Brom, which brought Mark Noble, the captain of West Ham, longtime captain, to Twitter to complain about Golden Sullivan selling this exciting young player. Diangana, keep an eye on him. I think he's going to have a breakout season this year for West Brom, even though I think they probably still go back down.
Yeah. Speaking of West Ham United, if you haven't checked it out yet, at worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage, we have our annual Premier League table predictions. So every year for the last 12 years, we've had we've asked our listeners and readers to go ahead and post the top 20 table, how you think the season will end. But you have to post it before the season begins. And the season begins, of course, on Saturday, 7:30 Eastern time, in Fulham against Arsenal. And in the teams that I have relegated, I have predicted to have relegated West Brom. And I think West Ham escapes by the skin of the teeth. Aston Villa goes down and Fulham goes down and Chelsea wins the league. Kartik, I don't think you've posted yours yet.
No, mine is kind of similar. I've got Chelsea winning the league. I have West Brom going down. I have Fulham going down. And I have Crystal Palace going down, even though I think maybe Hodgson is making some moves this week. They just secured Batshuayi again. He'll come back to them. He's been there on loan before. I think Villa are making some moves. They just got Ollie Watkins from Brentford, a player that Dean Smith has worked with before. And there's another signing they're making that I'm blanking out on that are going to keep them out of that bottom three as far as I'm concerned. I think West Ham are in better shape under David Moyes. Snodgrass is fit again, although he's always injured, right?
Yeah.
He's another guy who was a very good Leeds player, actually.
Yeah.
But Snoddy is often injured. Mikel Antonio is often injured. Suchek is a player I like. I think West Ham just has so much quality in the team that they'll stay up just based on that. And then I think the top four would be Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United, and either Arsenal or Man City in fourth. I don't think Spurs did enough to finish in the top four, but I got a kind of a sneaking suspicion that Mourinho is going to be able to get this team to play at a higher level this year with a full kind of year of him being the manager. Matt Doherty, for me, has been one of the top 10 players in the Premier League the last two seasons. So to me, that is a big signing. They haven't done enough elsewhere, though. So they've improved their right-back situation immeasurably, I think. And I took a lot of flack for this on Twitter. I love Trent Alexander-Arnold. Don't get me wrong. I think he's great. But he plays the same position as Doherty. And I think Doherty has been the best right-back in England the last 2 years. But otherwise, I don't think Spurs have done enough. So I think they're on the outside looking in. They probably finished sixth.
So listeners, if you are a Premier League expert or you consider yourself a Premier League expert, or if you just want to have some fun, definitely go over to worldsoccertalk.com before the season starts on Saturday and post your predictions in the comments section of that article. Also, while you're there, don't forget to pick up at noon Eastern time on Thursday and thereafter the free copy of the Ultimate Soccer TV and Streaming Guide, 22 pages packed full of information. It's definitely going to be one of those documents or one of those PDFs you might want to print out or keep on your desktop and keep for the whole season to find out who has what games, who has what competitions, cups, etc. it's a very confusing time, and it's a lot of different choices, a lot of different options, and a lot of different changes, which is why we wanted to put that out there and to make it easier as possible to watch the beautiful game. And Kartik, all right, here we go. So heading into another weekend of soccer from around the world, some major games coming up. The one thing I'm looking forward to the most this season, Kartik, is having the fans back in the stadium. And I just, that part of it is going to be, for me, whichever league can do it is going to be a crowning achievement in a safe and healthy way. But that's the one thing that I think is should be celebrated when once that happens, because that's a really positive sign. And again, I'm hoping that if it's not the Bundesliga, if it's not Liga, and if it's not the Premier League, one of the leagues is going to be able to do it. And then pretty quickly, things will improve. It may not happen until some point next year, as far as having a full stadium, but we're getting closer and closer to that. So that's the one thing I'm looking forward to. But Kartik, heading into this weekend, lots to look forward to for the season. It's been a fun summer. It's been a long summer. It's been a very hot summer. But here we go. And what should fans do this weekend and into the future?
Enjoy your football.